Good evening. It's certainly good to be here with y'all tonight, and thank you so much for allowing me to come back and share with y'all again and give you some updates. Well, there's just some exciting things happening in Honduras, and so I'm excited to share them with y'all tonight. I'm going to start off letting the boys have a participation. We'll start off with Kenton.
Hi, my name is Kenton, and I'm 11 years old. And I have a verse for you. Job 19:25-27. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another. Job 19:25-27.
Good. All right, you can go down.
Hello, my name's Kate, and then I'm 6.
Okay.
Romans 6:23, that if thou sacrifice thy mouth the Lord Jesus, thou believe in thine heart that God has raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. Romans 10:9.
Good evening, my name is Caleb, and I'm 14 years old, and I'm in the 8th grade. I had a really fun time going to Honduras. I usually go every year in January. This time, we did about 27 surgeries in about 2 days out in San Luis. There were about 6 people that came to help do the surgeries. And my main part, when I go down, I translate for, Dad usually has like an electrician come down or something like that. Well, this time, Dr. Coleman's wife came down, and I helped go in town, and she wanted to make brownies, so I helped her get the recipes and translate and stuff for that.
The Lord has been good to us with our ministry in Honduras, and I was thinking earlier, where do I start, and what do I put in as far as update, and has everybody, is it an update, or does everybody know what's going on in Honduras? And I was talking to Brother Mike, and he said, no, I don't. So we'll try to go through and give some information. I think that y'all know most of these up here, don't you? All right. We got Kendrick is 17 years old. Am I coming through? Nope. All right. Kendrick is 17 years old. There's Caleb, Kenton, then Caden, and then Kyson. He will be 2 years old in April. And Tiffany also sends her greetings to y'all this evening. The Lord has blessed us so much with our ministry in Honduras and the way everything is moving forward. And as far as our ministry goes, just to give a little bit of background, when Tiffany and I got married, we both had calls to be missionaries in Honduras. And the Lord, we thought that we were going to go to Brazil. And the Lord, as we began to move that direction, Tiffany finished her nursing degree and we started moving that direction. And it just wasn't meant to be. And I just remembered I didn't turn this on. It helps if you turn it on, don't it? It's on my end. I'm sorry. So the Lord opened the doors for us to go to Honduras. And so in 2005, we went to Honduras. And while there in Honduras for the first year and a half, I did legal work. I did a whole slew of maintenance and legal work and that kind of stuff. And as I one day was walking around the backside of our property there, we have about 35 acres there in San Luis, Honduras. Our ministry consists of a national church. We have about 65 congregations. We have two radio stations and we have a medical clinic. And so I was walking around the backside of our property there where our chicken coop and stuff is. And I was saying, Lord, what else do you want me to do here? Is this all that you want me to do is pay bills and do legal work? And I enjoy doing all that stuff, but is this it? And it was very clear that the Lord said, Daniel, you've got 35 acres and you're not doing anything with it. And I began to think, what would happen if next month there was not money, because we work off of donations, we work from money that we receive from the United States, and what would happen if that money did not come, it did not arrive? And I began to realize that our boat would go under. That means the clinic would close, the radio station would close. And so I asked the Lord, I said, well, Lord, what would you have us to do? And it was very clear. He said, you've got 35 acres and you're not doing anything with it. And I said, well, Lord, I've never been an entrepreneur before, but if you tell me what to do, I'll be glad to do what you want me to do. And man, it was like he flipped a light bulb in my brain and these business ideas just started coming. And I mean, so many of them that I had to start sorting them out, which ones were the good ones and which ones were not. And the Lord, first of all, started off with a chicken project, and we'll go through some of those projects and show you some of what's there. But what part of our ministry has been to start small businesses, to give local people work, to help put food on their table, and it also helps support our ministry so that our ministries can continue to move forward and spread the gospel. So I guess in a nutshell, that's kind of where we have come from and what we have been working towards. We are still working that direction, even though we are in a huge project right now of a medical center. Man, I never imagined being where I am right now in the middle of this, but God has just been opening doors, and it's much bigger than I am. And so I'm excited to tell you about more of it tonight. I want to start off with the first slide about... Boy, we've jumped good, haven't we, brother? You're good. All right, I'm going to go over here now that I've got a mic. Well, maybe I should go over here. All right, we're going to start off with the Leyba family. The Leyba family is a Honduran family. Pastor Leyba was our national church president. His name is Angel or Angel. He was our national church president for 8 years. The Middletons were missionaries in the Dominican Republic, and Brother Middleton got sick, and they had to return home and left a very big empty place in the Dominican Republic. And so we began to look around and ask, was there anybody available to go to the Dominican Republic? And the Leybas raised their hand that they were willing to go. And so God has been blessing them. They packed up just about their whole family. Their oldest daughter is married to a medical doctor in Guatemala, and the rest of the family packed up and went to Honduras. Some of the sacrifices they made, Andre, who is here on the end, is about 25 years old. He had graduated and had a very good job in Honduras. Those are very hard to come by. But Andre, when his dad decided to go to Dominican Republic, he said, Dad, I feel like I should go with you. And so he walked into the business where he was working, and he told him, he says, I'm putting in my resignation because I'm going with my family to be missionaries in the Dominican Republic. And so he packed everything along with his brother and his sister, and they have gone to the Dominican Republic, and they're working on their third year to be there. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. God has been opening doors for them. We've been using the Shepherd's Global Classroom study, and many of them are studying. This last, about 2 weeks ago, they baptized 5 new Christians. They had been a while since they had baptized people. And so in order to be baptized there, they have a pretty good process that you have to go through before you get baptized and you join the church. And anyway, the 4 churches there in the Dominican Republic, God is just opening doors left and right. And so since they came from Honduras, and I help push them to go there. I travel back and forth to the Dominican Republic. That's included in part of my responsibilities to go and check on them and encourage them and make sure that everything's going well. And so God is just working in a special way. Andre, the young man that I was telling you about, is also a Sunday school teacher. He also plays the keyboard. He's added music to what they do, and he's their Sunday school teacher, and he's in the process of opening a youth group among the 4 different churches that are there in the Dominican Republic. We have some prayer cards that I put on the back if you would be interested in praying for the Leyba family. There, it's kind of interesting. They speak Spanish. That's their big advantage that they have. But the disadvantage is they crossed cultures. And it still is kind of funny when I was talking to Sister Leyba, Gloria Leyba. She's telling me, she's like, Daniel, they eat burnt beans down here, and I can't hardly do burnt beans. And I said, well, but you're going to get used to it. That's just the way it is. You have to be willing to try about anything. And but God has been helping them, and it's really neat to see. The church is moving forward. They have one of the churches that they have in Kilometer 23. Was about to fall in, and it was little, and it was too small, and so they are in the process of enlarging that and building a regular church building, and they're excited, and anyway, it's pretty neat. So, all right. Here is going to Honduras, just some information that we have there that I've already shared with you. We have about 65 congregations scattered throughout Honduras. We have our medical clinic there in San Luis. We have a radio ministry in the city, San Pedro Sula, and a radio ministry in San Luis, Santa Barbara. We have a Bible school for training pastors and teachers. This is the town of San Luis. This is where we lived there until 2015, June of 2015, and where our clinic, our radio station, and our Bible school are located. This is a zoom up of the clinic over in the corner here. It's kind of neat. You can go on Google Maps now, and you can zoom in and find Clinic Lucy Vida. So for those that are curious and like Google Maps, it's interesting. They've got everybody located. As far as some of our projects in San Luis, this looks over our property. A friend of mine loaned me a drone, and I just had all kind of fun with that drone, all right? So this is off on one corner. This is our radio station. This is a mission house. We have a quarter-mile runway that runs right down the middle. Here's our clinic. It's been there since 1978. They deliver between 300 and 400 babies a year, sew up a lot of machete wounds, and anyway, more about that in a little bit. Here is where we're building surgery center. You can kind of see at that point the walls are up and the roof's on. There's a second building that's going in beside it that's a part of it. It's going to include an eye center, a dental center, as well as a laboratory. And here in the front of the property is our pizza shop that we have there. Now, some of our projects, we have about 13 projects that are there. We have bananas, we have allspice, we have coffee, we have chickens. We have a well that we pump water out of. I went the other day, and I just out of curiosity, when we first dug that well, I put a meter on it. I said, I want to see how much water we get out of this thing. Well, the other day, I went down there and flipped that thing up, and we pumped over 10 million gallons of water out of that hole. God just must have put us in. I mean, y'all remember everything that we went through digging that thing? It took 3 years to dig that well, and the guy, poor Bob, his equipment kept messing up, and we would send to the States for another piece of equipment, and 3 months later, we'd start again. It was just, y'all, there were a lot of y'all that helped us pray for that, and anyway, it is very productive. God must have let us get right down in the river down there. We're 2,300 feet up of elevation. And we dug down 300 feet, and we're just in something really good down there. We've got cacao, which is what they make chocolate out of. We've got honeybees, a 30-year mahogany project, coconut trees, mango trees, a pizza shop that we just opened in June. We took down an ice machine, and we started the first process of selling bagged ice in San Luis. And we have a medical center opening. So, all right, Brother Johnny. We'll start off with the chicken project. I thought that chickens were supposed to be easy. In fact, somebody told me, said, oh, chickens are a piece of cake. That's the easy thing. Well, when you get 1,000 of them clucking around there, it's kind of funny everything that you can hear of a chicken when they sneeze. Have you ever heard a chicken sneeze? You think I'm funny, but you start listening and you can hear a chicken sneeze and tell when they're sick. And I had to learn all that. I didn't have a clue how to take care of all these chickens, but we found out real quick that chickens get sick just like humans do. And if you don't take care of them when they get sick, then they start going to heaven or something. We were there last June. Our family went down and spent just about 6 weeks there in Honduras, and my boys, I tell you what, every time we go back, they're just ready to go ahead and pack it all up and take it back down there and go as a family to live again. And it's just hard to explain if you don't have it, when you have it in your heart. Tiffany told me a while back, I guess it kind of got to me. She said, go follow your heart. You know, it's down there in Honduras somewhere. And that's really where this all is, where this goes. There was a lady when we first visited San Luis, the very first time we went to visit her, and she brought us a glass of water or whatever. She said, they say that whoever drinks water in San Luis always comes back. And that was her addiction, that she was always going to have us come back. But we were there last June, and God opened a lot of doors for us last June, and Caden loves chickens. Anyway, he said, Daddy, we need to go up and pet the chickens. So we went up to the chicken coop. There's 1,000 of them. They lay around 800 eggs a day. That's enough cartons. I mean, but we sell out just about every day. All right. The people in the town love the eggs. You can imagine what the eggs look like that come across the dirt road from the city. They bounce across 45 minutes of dirt road. So by the time they're there, you don't even have to scramble them. You just open them up and put them in your pan. They're ready to go. We also have allspice. A lot of kids like toads. I don't know. I don't have a clue. But boy, we've got some whoppers down there. Those things, some of those, the biggest ones we've seen are about that big around, about that thick. And in Honduras, they have this, they think the tourists like this. So they dry the toads. Okay, so you can buy a dried toad and bring it home with you if you want it for decoration in your house. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. That's enough toads. This is a coffee fields. Go back. There you go. Here is a typical coffee tree. It's got a lot of green berries on it. Then you got your bananas hanging in the back. The bananas are used as shade over the coffee trees because the sun rays are so strong. These are the ripe coffee beans. It's kind of neat, some details that you they can pick. You can pick red berries, but until you can squeeze that red berry and get three drops of juice out of it, that's when it's really ripe. All right, and then it's got two beans inside. They'll hull that off of there and then wash them and dry them. And then we send them here to enjoy a good cup of coffee. That's what coffee looks like when it blooms. I think I told you before, but Tiffany, one time she was like, honey, I want to see snow so bad. She's like, I need to see snow. Well, we woke up one morning and walked out, and we had planted coffee all out in front of our house and down the runway. And as we got up that morning and walked out, all the coffee fields had bloomed that morning. And it literally, it was just a blanket of white across it. Tiffany said, see there? God might have not brought the cold, but he brought the snow. This is what bananas look like after they're cut. Each banana tree produces one stalk of bananas, and then you cut that tree down. That banana tree will have about 12, they call them suns, that grow around the bottom. You break those off, and you leave one strong one to replace the adult banana tree that's there. And we have over 2,000 banana trees planted around the property. And so Brother Carlos is our agricultural man. When I was praying that the Lord would send me three people that I could trust, that I could work with. And Brother Carlos is one of those men, and he is good with agriculture. I called him when we were looking for that person. I called him. I said, Brother Carlos, we need somebody. Do you know anybody out in your community? Because he lives about an hour away. Do you know anybody that can help us? And he said, yeah, me. I said, oh, I never thought about you, but are you sure? And he said, yeah. I said, what about your coffee fields? He said, my family will take care of them. And Brother Carlos packed up his wife and his daughter and his son and came to San Luis and moved into the mission house. And he's been taking care of our coffee plantations and banana plantations. And he oversees the chicken project. And anyway, he's our agriculture man, and God's blessing him in a special way. Now, we started to plant. Now, this is details. It probably don't mean much to you. But when we were planting and trying to decide what to plant, we were going to plant what they call platanos. Okay, platanos is that long banana, you know, that they slice up and they fry and stuff. And we started planting those. And then all of a sudden, I realized that there was not as big a market for that down there as what we needed. So with these bananas, these are called export bananas. And there is a truck that comes by every week. So we don't have to pay for transportation to these bananas. We don't have to sell them anywhere except to that guy. He comes by with his truck. Carlos goes out through the coffee fields. He cuts all the bananas, the stalks of bananas that are just about ripe, loads them on the guy's truck. They haul them all over to Guatemala and sell them out of Guatemala saying they're Guatemalan bananas. You know, it works. So sometimes when you go in the store and you look on that little sticker and it says Guatemala, you might actually be eating a banana from Honduras. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. You remember the water project. That was the before and after picture. Go ahead. God has opened this project. This project just continues to grow. It amazes me how water has... There was another person that came into San Luis and opened the market for selling water. But it was so expensive because they would bring it from the city. So when we opened our business up in San Luis and began to process water and sell clean water in those 5-gallon bottles and little bags, it was a whole lot cheaper price because we didn't have transportation cost. And so this project is opening a lot of doors. We have a guy came with a commercial system. His name's Roger. I was worrying about it. I was thinking, Lord, how in the world are we going to process water? How are we going to get the product we need and be sure this is the right stuff that we're selling people? And all of a sudden, this guy's name, Roger, that I had met several years ago, came to mind, and I called Roger and I said, Roger, listen, we dug this well and we've got this water, but we're having problems with the water. And what he said, come see what I've got. And so we went to see what Roger had, and Roger ended up telling us, he said, listen, I'll sell you all the equipment at my cost to help your ministry. He said, if you'll let me maintain it every month, Well, I tell you what, in Honduras, I don't know anybody that wants to get in a vehicle and drive 2 hours up into the mountains to check on a water project. But Roger's agreement with us that he would sell us the equipment if we would allow him to come up there to come check the water to be sure we were selling quality water. And so Roger makes that trip every 30 days. He has helped Adonai keep all the filters clean. We have the reverse osmosis. We have UV and all kind of carbon filters and water softeners. And man, you name it, it's on that wall. And the people, they have a saying in town that nothing good comes out of San Luis. And you know, once you get that stigma, it's kind of hard to get over, okay? But there's a man that had received a grant from some nonprofit organization to plant potatoes, okay? And so he planted this whole field of potatoes there in San Luis. Came time to harvest them. He harvested all those potatoes, put them in his truck, and went into town to try to sell those potatoes. You know, he couldn't sell them. He went from store to store to store trying to sell those potatoes, and the people say, where are they from? And he say, San Luis. And they didn't want them. So he took his truck and he drove out of town, got another truck, swapped all the potatoes over into the other truck like it was coming from the city, and came back into San Luis the other direction, sold every one of his potatoes and didn't have a bit of problem. But when we started selling water, people started tasting that water and said, this comes from San Luis? I can't believe that's pretty good water. So that's sweet water. And so God has just opened the door. This project is bringing in close to $2,000 a month to help the ministry there in Honduras. And for the last 3 years, they have sent a letter to EFM asking, would you lower the money that you send down for regular budget to pay salaries and utilities and building maintenance, because we're making money here now. And so that has been going the other direction, and that's really neat to see how God's opening that door. Francisco, I want to tell you a little story about Francisco, because this is, I've given you a lot on projects and there's still more to come. But we invest in people as well. Francisco was a young man. He was really small when his dad committed suicide in front of the whole family in their house one afternoon. And as Francisco began to grow up, he let it be known that his desire in life was just to do the same thing his daddy did. That's what he was going to do. But there was our Bible school director, Roberto, began to take Francisco, and he began to love Francisco and invite him for supper and come be with my family, and just took him under his wings and began to love on Francisco. Now Francisco has grown up, and Francisco is now trying to serve the Lord. He's now working in our water plant. He no longer has a desire to follow his dad's footsteps. Francisco has a very uphill battle. His mom is a prostitute and his sister is a prostitute. And he lives in one of our dormitory buildings there most of the time, because when he goes home, his family hassles him about going to church and about serving God. But Francisco is one of our most faithful employees, that every morning he's there in the water plant around 7 o'clock in the morning and begins the process of purifying the water. He sterilizes all the jugs. He cleans them. He scrubs them. He peels the old stickers off of them. He fills them back up, and then the truck pulls up and he helps load them into the truck. And Francisco, God is helping him in a special way. But if you think of Francisco, you pray for him, okay? He's got an uphill battle. This last summer, as we were in Honduras, Francisco, he loves teaching other people about what he does. He's pretty happy about it. Caleb, he loves Caleb helping him. Caleb many times will go into the water plant. I walked in there one time and didn't even recognize Caleb. He had that one of them head things on and the boots on and the whole nine yards. But Caleb goes in and helps him in the water plant. And Kendrick was there as well. Last June, well, actually before that, I had been praying, Lord, what's our next project that we need to do in Honduras? And I remember we were on our medical team, and Yancy Sagastumi lives up in Pennsylvania, up in Howard, Pennsylvania. And Yancy, he had been with me. I'd gone by. We graduated from high school together at Penview, and we were we were having deputation in that area and went by, and he fed us pizza and stromboli and, you know, just trying his best to fatten us up. And I said, Yancy, why don't you come with me and translate on one of my medical teams? And he's like, are you serious? And I said, yeah. Well, Yancey's family's from Guatemala. They had escaped from Guatemala many years ago. They were trying to kill his dad, and they had escaped to Canada and then immigrated to the United States. And Yancey's family has ran pizza shops for years. And so Yancey, on one of the trips, he looks at me, he says, Daniel, you need a pizza shop around here. And I said, oh, no, Yancey. We don't need I don't want to mess with a restaurant. I said, restaurants like having another family. You got to be there when it opens and you got to be there when it closes, and we just don't want to get into all that. He's like, all right, but I'm just telling you, you can make pretty good money making pizza. And I was like, yeah, well, not right now. Well, then the story came around that there was a young man in town that he would get on the bus and he'd go 3 hours into the city to San Pedro Sula to Pizza Hut, and he would buy two or three pizzas, and he'd get back on the bus and come 2 to 3 hours to San Luis, and he would sell cold pizza by the slice. And people were buying it. Well, you know, anybody that thinks anything about business, their little bells go off upstairs and says, if somebody can sell cold Pizza Hut pizza, well, surely we can make a good pizza here in San Luis that they'd sell. And so I picked up the telephone and I said, Yancey, are you still got a deal about that pizza shop down here? He's like, are you kidding me? I said, no. He said, well, I'll help you put it together. And so Yancey began to collect supplies and pizza oven and refrigerators and all that we needed. He made a list and sent me a list of everything that we needed to buy for a pizza shop, and he began putting it all together. Well, last April, we sent a container down to Honduras, and when we got done packing the container, we all stood back and looked at it, and it was pretty nice. It was a pizza shop in a box. A container box, and it looked pretty cool. We got it to Honduras and began to unload all that stuff and put the pizza shop together. And this is the building that developed into the pizza shop. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. This is some of the delicious pizza that come out, and people are loving the pizza to death. I mean, even the gringos, that's what they call us American people when we go down, all right? Even the gringos like the pizza when they go down there. And it's so many of the pizza shops, they'll skimp on the sauce and sprinkle just enough cheese on it to say it's got cheese, and then they call it pizza. Well, when they walk out of our pizza shop, the cheese is stringy and the sauce is good. And anyway, anybody hungry? Yeah. All right. The neat thing about this, go back one, Brother Johnny. The neat thing about this, it provides income for another family. It will help fund our San Luis ministry, and it moves us closer to our local sustainability goal. My goal through all of these little small projects that we have had is to help provide funds. You know, it just, you ought to see the look on their face when they begin to talk about, yeah, I did that. This is our clinic. This is our radio station. This is, you know, we're the ones picking this coffee over here that we're selling. When they start, it's just really cool to see them take ownership of what is there. When before it was all the gringos is what they called it. They said, yeah, that's the gringos thing down there. And well, now it's not the gringos thing. Now it's them working and them making it happen. And it's just really cool to see. All right. So this is the kitchen. All these things came down. Yancey had such a ball shopping. He found some deals. I didn't have a clue what I was looking for. And, you know, I've questioned God many times. Of God, why in the world did you bring me to be so involved in this type of ministry? Because I'm not an electrician. I'm not a computer guru. I don't know anything about surgery centers. I don't know anything about a pizza shop. I really don't know anything about delivering babies and sewing up machete wounds. And I don't know anything about radio. And I could just go on and on of everything that God has put me right in the middle of that I don't have a clue what I'm doing. So I began to ask God, how are we going to work our way around this? Because I don't know what I'm doing here. And I felt clear that what he said is you find people who do. And so what I have worked to do is in Honduras is to build a team of all these people that know how to do this stuff that I don't know how to do. And then in 2015, when I pulled me out of the middle, you know what? It just kept right on rolling. And it's been neat to see how God is taking every bit of this and moving it forward. Go ahead to the next slide. Now, this is Brother Yancey teaching Sister Nancy. Sister Nancy is a pastor's wife, is helping to support a young man who is a pastor. He also works in a radio station. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, they open the pizza shop and begin to sell pizza. Go ahead. Last June, we had several medical teams that came into San Luis. There were people that walked 2-3 hours to come see the medical teams. And so Nancy needed to make pizzas. And if you've never made pizza before, it's something to make one or two pizzas. But you start making 50 pizzas, and I tell you what, your hands feel like they're going to fall off in the floor. And so I figured, you know, we might as well get Nancy in shape. And so we began to work on Nancy, and I said, Nancy, we're going to make as many pizzas as you can make today. I think we made 50 pizzas that day. And at the end of the day, she's kind of propping her arms on the table, pressing out the pizzas. But anyway, we had fun. We sent the boys down, and they were handing out pieces of pizza to the people that were coming in. And we made a lot of happy people that day. And that was the first pizza out of the oven. Yancey was pretty happy with how that turned out. Our radio ministry is something that you just really don't know. You can be sitting there behind the microphone and just not know who all's listening. All right, you can be sitting there preaching your heart out or talking your heart out or your brains or whatever you want to say, and it just you don't know who's listening. But how many times we get telephone calls from people that call in and Sister Esther, going to the next one. There you go. This is our group that works in the radio station there. Sister Esther, she's an incredible evangelizer. She's just got a gift for evangelism. And those people, she keeps a book with all of her stories written in it. And there are so many people that call in that have problems and have difficulties, and she puts them on a prayer list and she begins to pray for them, or they call in and she says, Well, have you given your heart to God? And they'll say, well, no. And she's like, well, that's the first thing you need to do. And you know, scripture says right here. And she opens it up and she just starts dealing with them. And for us over with, they give their heart to God. And it's just really neat to see the homes that we get into there. Now, God opened the door back December 2 years ago for us to get a 3,000-watt transmitter. We have been operating with a 1,000-watt transmitter. And that had been reaching into a lot of homes. But our transmitter went down. There were not any replacement parts. There was not a new 1,000-watt transmitter was $12,000. And I had $12,000 that we had saved up for that kind of situation. But somebody mentioned, you know, it'd be really neat to put a 3,000-watt transmitter in there. We could reach more places. And that does sound like a good idea, don't it? And so we checked prices, and it was like $25,000 to get a 3,000-watt transmitter. And I was like, well, that's way out of my price range. So, you know, we'll just go on and get the 1,000-watt. And so at church one Sunday, I testified, it was Wednesday night, I thanked the Lord for helping us to be able to purchase the 1,000-watt transmitter or order it. It was going to have to be built and had to be sent to us. And I wanted to get it for our trip in August. And this older gentleman in our church walked up to me, and he's about this tall, and he looked up at me. He says, I thought you wanted a 3,000-watt transmitter. And I says, well, I did. But they're $25,000. He says, well, I think you should have waited on that 3,000 watt. And I said, oh my goodness, Brother Paul. I said, well, I really didn't want to miss the Lord's will on this. And I said, if the Lord wants to give me a 3,000 watt, I'd much rather have a 3,000 watt transmitter than a 1,000 watt. But I said, I've already got this one ordered. And I said, let me make some calls and see what I can do. And I said, Lord, if you want us to have a 3,000 watt, just help that 1,000 watt not to make it in time for us to go to Honduras in August. And sure enough, that transmitter didn't come in. And I called the company back and I said, listen, how big a deal would it be to get that 3,000 watt? How much time could you give me? He says, I can give you 2 weeks. And I tell you, within 2 weeks, God had provided, I think, $32,000, which covered the transmitter, the shipping, the new wire for the antenna. And it is so cool. We are getting calls from places that we've never gotten into before. And it's neat. On Sunday mornings, they have a Sunday worship time. I don't remember their exact schedule now, but I know that this has been part of their programming. And the kids out in some of those towns will gather around a stump and have the radio there and have their Sunday school around the stump out in those remote areas. We've had one guy call in that was getting ready to commit suicide. He was sitting on the side of his bed, and he said, one thing I'm going to do before I take my life is I'm going to just flip through the radio and see what's playing. And as he began to flip through there, he came across our radio station, Radio Light and Life.
And he began to listen, and before it was over with, he picked up the telephone to call the radio station. And that morning, he gave his heart to the Lord instead of taking his life. It's just, you never know who's listening. But God opened so many doors through our radio ministry there. Now, one of the things we never expected is it jumped the electric bill from about $300 a month to about $1,000 a month. That's another story in itself. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. So this is the next monument that is really cool. Our ministry in Honduras, we have been in the process of training leaders and transferring ownership, okay? In other words, in all of our projects, what we've been doing with the National Church, missionaries came in. Brother Leonard Sankey came to Honduras 52 years ago, opened a church in Honduras. We now have 65 congregations there, and we trained and we taught pastors. We developed their board, their local leadership, help them register with the government, and then they are operating their churches. We have been working that same direction with the radio station, with the Bible school, and this last week, I got back from Honduras this past Friday night at 10 o'clock. But one of the things we did there while we were there was we had the radio anniversary. It was the 42nd radio anniversary. And the neat thing about that anniversary was we transferred ownership from Evangelistic Faith Missions to the National Church. Now, part of the cool thing of that, go ahead and flip the next picture. You can see the crowd that came in for this transfer of ownership. When I did an anniversary service, I think the most I ever had there was probably 300 or 400 people, and that was getting a really good concert artist to come in and sing for them. When we do this transfer of ownership to the radio state, to the National Church, there was between 1,000 to 1,200 people that showed up for this celebration Saturday before last. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. They went and bought 10 pizzas from the pizza shop, brought them down there, was selling pizza by the slice to raise money. They were selling these, they had frozen drinks in these little bags. They were selling frozen drinks. They had bought a whole pile of used clothes, and they were selling used clothes. This is the National Church president's wife, Elda, there. They had a whole spread of used clothes out there from the States. They say they like our used clothes better because the thread is a whole lot thicker. We have a standard when they make them in the third world countries. It has to be a better quality of thread. The Honduran thread, when they make the regular clothes, you can take them, and a lot of them you can just pull them apart. So one guy told me, he said, I'd rather buy a used shirt from the United States than a brand new shirt in Honduras. And so they had this whole pile of used clothes that they were selling to raise funds to support the radio station because they're now running the radio station. Another thing that they did is the pastors, all of the local pastors, we have about 15 churches in that area, they take the old water jugs, the ones that aren't useful anymore, and they take them out to their church, and each church was working to fill up one of those 5-gallon jugs with money. Now you take it, some of the donations might only be 5 cents, that's one limpita, but everybody puts their offering in there to help support the radio station. At the end of the service, all the jugs were here up in front. The pastors had brought them up to give thanks and stuff. That was the offering that they took up. This was the actual the passing the keys from one to the other, and it's a really neat thing. This is the National Church board that was there, and everybody was witness to what was happening that day. And I don't feel like that I can really express the feeling that I had that day good enough to see them take ownership of that, because for how many years? Well, for 42 years. If the light bulb went bad, they waited on me to change it. If the radio went down, they waited on us to fix it. But now they take ownership of it. They run it. There's the radio station in San Pedro. They took ownership of that probably close to 10 years ago, and it's operating just fine. And I looked at them and I said, y'all've got so many benefits and so many, y'all speak the language, you know the culture, you just got so many, it makes so much more sense for y'all to operate the things that are in your country. It's one thing for us to come and teach leadership and stuff to help you learn and move down that road, but y'all have to take ownership of this. And it's neat to see them stepping forward and doing that in our ministry there in Honduras. Before I left on Friday, they were having their church board meeting, so I stopped in to say hello to them. And they're like, oh, we got to get a picture. Brother Edgardo Luna is the National Church president, and he is doing a fantastic job. He has really stepped in and been supportive of the clinic, of the radio ministry, of our ministry in San Luis, And so it's really, he's doing a good job. The clinic is the last thing we'll touch on. God has been opening doors for the clinic. It's a 24-hour clinic. We offer ultrasound, x-ray, nebulization, wound care, overnight care, maternity care, electrocardiogram, medicine, and of course, the gospel. And somebody corrected me, I think the last time that I showed this presentation, I said the gospel should have been at the top. And I agree with them. It should have been at the top. So you forgive me, I forgot to move it. Somebody's always good at helping you put stuff in order, aren't they? Go ahead, Brother Johnny. This is what we're about in the clinic there. Newborn babies being born in the clinic. It's a young lady, don't know what she had wrong. Babies have a lot of asthma problems there. They'll cook in the houses, the smoke, they'll breathe the smoke and from the fire and get asthma. Bad water a lot of times gives them diarrhea. This young man tried to commit suicide, and Miriam, who's our charge nurse, was able to lead him to the Lord that day instead of him taking his life. Gideon Ministry is a really big part of our ministry there. We try to, everybody that comes through the clinic gets a Gideon Bible. The Gideon, in the back of the Gideon Bibles is the plan of salvation. And we use that to be able to share the gospel with everybody. Kaylin is one of our nurses. And there she's sharing the gospel and praying with one of the ladies in the maternity area. Back in 2018, well actually it's more like 2017, I was praying. I'd been praying for about 2 years. Lord, what do we do with the clinic? Is this where it's supposed to be? Is all we're supposed to do is, because now there's like six doctors in town and everybody's taking blood pressure and doing sugar tests and selling medicines and doing a lot of the same stuff that we do. And I said, Lord, you know, we're just dividing the competition. What else do we need to do? And it wasn't long after that this surgeon, Dr. Ronald Coleman, came into our clinic and Sister Hannah McDowell was working that day, and he just asked her, he said, are y'all interested in doing surgeries here? And so they called me, and man, just as soon as I was told, asked that question, I felt clear, that's what we're supposed to do. That's where we're supposed to go. It's something in San Luis. There's 45,000 people that live in that area, and they all have to get on a bus and go 3 hours away. Well, see, this opens our doors to bring these people into us to be able to share the gospel with each one of them that come through our doors. So it started in 2018. Dr. Coleman did the first surgeries. We actually did it in our baby delivery room, pushed all the baby equipment back, sterilized the room, and set up as a surgery room. We've done 4 surgery teams so far. We have done 117 successful surgeries. The cost of the surgeries is less than a quarter of the normal cost, and it has potential of helping make the clinic self-sustained. And it's a great opportunity for evangelism. Now, the difference between the surgery center compared with what is the clinic is that when somebody comes into the clinic and they're bleeding or they're having a baby, we're going to help them whether they have money or not. Okay? The difference with the surgery center is that the surgeries and stuff that we're doing, people know ahead of time that they need that surgery. And so even if it's going to cost them $50, they know that they have to have $50 to come in and put on the table if they want that surgery that day. So the income from the surgery center has a very good potential of helping support the clinic in the area that many times people will have a baby and they'll say, we don't have any money to pay. Well, they've had their baby and they're going to go home. And so it'll help balance that out. Like right now, we're doing a lot of ambulatory surgeries. It's hernias and, I don't know, cysts and stuff like that. But a lot of them have come and told us, they said, I've been to the public hospital 3 or 4 times, and they just tell me to come back. And they give me another date, and I prepare for surgery, and I go back for my surgery, and I can't get in again. And so our goal is to help be able to do that for these people, and have the opportunity to share the gospel with them. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. Now, Kendrick has, back, I don't know, a year or two ago, he decided he wanted to be a surgeon. And, it's funny, as kids grow up, you ask them what they want to be, and they give you certain things that they want to be. And, you know, sometimes they grow out of them, and sometimes they grow into them. And Dr. Coleman was there last June doing surgeries as well. And I said, Dr. Coleman, Kendrick thinks he wants to be a surgeon. Would you mind just plugging him in, let him watch, put him in the corner, let him watch? Do you think he let him watch? I don't think he let him watch. He gowned him up and told him he was going to assist him and he was going to hand him all the instruments he needed. And, that kind of went extreme compared to what I had in mind of Kendrick finding out if he wanted to be a surgeon. But the way things came out is Dr. Coleman came out. He had a great big smile on his face. He said, listen, that boy's got what it takes. He's good. All right. I won't tell you all the bloody details that went on in the middle, but go ahead. My biggest joy that I have with these, because I don't get into the stitches and all that stuff. But I tell you what, to sit down beside the bed of these people that come into our clinic, and I begin to visit with them and say, "How you doing?" "Oh, I'm doing good." "What kind of work do you do?" "Ah," he said, "I'm a farmer." "Yar, what kind of farmer? Do you have coffee?" "Yeah, I got coffee." "Well, what kind of coffee you got? You got Arabica coffee, or you got that Robusto coffee?" "Oh, I've got Arabica coffee." "Well, what kind do you plant? Has the Roya hit it?" And, you know, God's helped me learn coffee, not just for selling coffee here, but it's given me a knowledge of coffee. When I sit down with those people and begin to talk to them, when I get done talking to them, they're looking me in the eyes, and I wind up the conversation, and they know that I really care about them. And then I ask them, "Where do you go to church? Do you go to church anywhere?" "Yeah, I go to church. Yeah, I do. "Well, tell me, where do you go to church?" "You know that church over there? What's the pastor's name?" "Well, I can't remember right now." "Well, let me pray with you, okay? Would you like to give your heart to the Lord today?" And you know, God just opens so many doors to be able to share the gospel with these people that comes through our doors. I've shown you a lot of projects and all this kind of stuff, and I'm not a minister. God opened the door for me to go to Honduras to help give work to a lot of people, to help develop this, to be able to share the gospel. He's opened so many doors for me to go into government offices. And I've eaten in the president in the White House twice, and I walk into offices now and people can't remember my name, but they remember me as the gringo with red hair. And I walk in their office, and like this last time, I took some coffee down, some of Honduras coffee I brought back to the States. We roasted it, and I took it back and gave it to this guy, and he's like, "So do you have any paperwork?" This is finances, okay? The government finance office that gives us our tax exemption in the country, and he says, "So do you have any paperwork you need me to help you with?" I mean, he's already ready to jump on the next things that are coming for the clinic to open doors. And so God has just opened so many doors for us. And it comes from loving people. Go ahead, Brother Johnny. This is a surgery center. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to talk fast. Surgery center started out this way. Go ahead. This is the surgery center here. This is the clinic. And this is the second building that's going in. One of the donations that we received for the surgery center was from an eye surgeon, and he had expressed interest in us opening an eye clinic. So we began to look and see what we could do, and God has opened the door for us to be able to open an eye clinic as well as a dental clinic. Go ahead. Just to show you a little bit of how things go down there. You know, here we back up a pumper truck and we pump the concrete into where it needs to go. Well, this is the way it works in Honduras. They got two mixers. All right. They've got what they call this a casket that they've got down here on the ground. And so these two guys over here will fill these wooden boxes up with so many scoops of gravel and so many scoops of sand and then a 5-gallon bucket full of water. They'll mix it, dump it in here. These guys will shovel it into their wheelbarrow. Go ahead. And then they'll haul it in a wheelbarrow at a time, and this is pouring the concrete inside of the surgery center. Go ahead. This is what the surgery center looks like right now on the inside. I was like, "We can't just have gray concrete." And they're like, "Well, all we got's color." And I said, "Well, throw some color in there." So they began to throw some color in on the floors when they were trialing it in, and it turned out being beautiful. So this is the pre-op and the post-op area. You look through this area, that's going to be the waiting room. This will be the reception area. There's a bathroom, and then down this hall goes back to the two surgery rooms that are in the back. This is looking the other direction up at the building, like from the pizza shop. And so this is going to have a laboratory on this end, and then we'll have an eye center. God has opened the door for us. I've got 6,000 pairs of eyeglasses sitting at my house right now that I got shipped in the last 2 weeks. This guy in Kentucky, he was on a medical team trip, and somebody handed him a box of glasses and said, "Distribute these." And he's like, "I don't know how." So anyway, long story short, he wrote a program to help organize glasses. And what he does is all these online companies that have these money-back guarantees for the glasses, when people send the glasses back to them, they donate the glasses to this man in Kindle optometry, and he sells them to people doing international trips for 35 cents a piece. What you have to have is an auto refractor. Anybody can do it. It connects to his computer program that he wrote, and it reads the prescription of their eyes. It goes into the program and says, you've got three pair of glasses that meet the need of this person, and tells you what shelf they're on and what box you need to pull them out of. And you walk over and you get them out and you put them on their face and you see if they can read. It's, you know, what was that book? Something about doing it for dummies or something like that. It's just easy. And so we've got an eye center going in here. And so I've got 6,000 pair of glasses. Tiffany was looking at me the other day. We're running out of room, honey. Where are we going to put this stuff in the house? So we've got an eye center going in there, and then a dental center on the other end, and two medical places for medical doctors to come work. Because the goal is we're going to have Honduran doctors come as well. We're not just looking for Americans to go down and work in these things. The idea is that we get Honduran doctors to come and invest in their own people. We get them to come be the pediatric and them to come be the oral surgeon, and we can give the gospel, and the idea is to bring children out of the communities and teach them how to brush their teeth. So instead of pulling so many teeth when the team comes in June, we'll teach them how to brush their teeth, and hopefully we'll begin to see a decline in how many teeth we pull. This is, it makes it look huge. I looked at that picture that the architect sent me, and I was like, that looks way too good and way too fancy. It's really not going to look that fancy. But this is the clinic that stands there right now. Okay, this is the area where our x-ray machine will have to go. This is where the education, where the dental center will be down here, and the eye center, and then the laboratory, and then the surgery center is tucked back there in the back. And we have a great big tree that sits right here and blocks the view of every bit of that. Right now, as you saw, the pillars are up and the bottom part is up. Next week they're supposed to pour the floor of the second story that's going to go in there. They said it's going to take 50 men to pour that. So they're going to mix it the same way they mix the other, with the mixers and pouring it into the casket, and the guys scooping it out of the casket into 5-gallon buckets, and then they're going to build a ramp. They're going to build a ramp that goes up to the top, and they're going to haul between 50 men. They're going to haul all that cement up. Now, there are plenty other options. I could go to town and I could rent something. But you know the way I look at it? There's 50 men that will go home that night having food to put on their table. When we went to start this project, the rock that was in there, we had rock that we dug out that was at least 3 feet deep. We have a bad section of town over below our ministry where the people come and they steal stuff from us. What we did is we went and found some guys who were willing to work and asked them to come, and they began to dig that rock out. They had picks, hammers, chisels, and metal bars that they did. 3 months it took them to dig all that rock out. But you know what? For 3 months that put food on their table. It was people that didn't have work. Those men every morning at 6 o'clock would show up to start working on picking that rock out of there. Well, now some of the gangs, what they were telling me this last trip, some of the gangs have started getting into that area. And those people are looking out for us because we have looked out for them. We started noticing some of our bananas were missing out of our banana plantation. Instead of going and saying, don't steal my bananas anymore. Actually, what we did is sent a guy down there and said, listen, the bananas are there. But when you cut the tree, be sure it don't land on our coffee plants. Because they were just cutting the tree and it would land on the coffee plants and squash the coffee plants. So if you're going to steal the bananas, at least be sure the tree lands the right place. Isn't that polite? Go ahead. All right, medical team. God opens this door here in about 2 or 3 weeks. We'll be headed to Honduras with the EFM medical team. And this is so cool. I encourage anybody to hear this, a nurse or a doctor or connected with something that way. We'd love to have you go sometime. We're starting. We had so much demand for people to go. People are wanting to go that we're starting a second team in September. So the third week of September, we're going to go. So we have a team going. There's 35 people that are going on this team. It's one of the biggest teams I've ever had. By the time we add our Honduran people to it, we're going to have close to 40 people trucking out to these communities. We go, everybody arrives on Friday. We visit churches and stuff on Sunday, and then we go to community Monday, a different community Tuesday, a different one Wednesday, and a different one Thursday. And we usually see close to 1,200 people. And if we come to y'all's mind, would you pray for us? Starts on the 29th of February and runs through March 7th. Every person, every child, and every adult that sees a doctor or a nurse that week receives the gospel. We take a national church pastor with us, and he gives an evangelical message to everybody that goes with us. And usually, between those 4 days of evangelism, there's usually at least 50 to 60 people that give their heart to Christ. They sent me a message about 2 months ago. One of the communities that we have visited consistently, about an hour and a half away from us, wanted a church to be opened. And they called our church and said, listen, y'all are the people that have showed how much you've loved us by bringing your medical teams to our community. Would you come and open a church in our community? We'll provide the church. We'll provide the place if you'll send a pastor to come pastor our people. All because we've taken medicine into those small communities and been able to help. This is our evangelism section. Brother Hector does there. Some of the young ladies go and teach classes for the children. Go ahead. This is inside. This is Kendrick translating there. Really neat. You have to see it with your own eyes of some of the older people that come in and sit down and they say they haven't been able to read for 2-3 years, and you pull out a pair of reading glasses and stuff and fit them to them, and the first thing they do is reach down. You see that old lady, what she's got? She pulled that Bible out of her bag. She hauls it everywhere with her. That thing's about 10 pounds, it looked like. She pulled that thing out, she opened that thing up, and she could read. Man, the look that comes across their face, that they're plugged back in again and they can read their Bible. And so this is what has fed my passion to see us open an eye center to be able to help people. They're going to be able to take cataracts off. They're going to be able to put lenses in people's eyes. They're going to be able to correct a lot of the eye problems that people have, because the sun rays are so direct in Honduras that it burns their eyes. And anyway, it's really cool. This older lady on the bottom here, we give gift bags. If any of you ladies like to crochet and stuff, if you make hot pads or anything like that, they love getting that kind of stuff. And we give them a little packet, a care packet. It's usually got fingernail clippers and maybe a little sewing kit and a hot pad and I don't know, just a bunch of little scattering of stuff. And we give one to everybody. And this little lady, I opened up her bag and I was showing her what was in it and telling her what was stuff. And I came up against the chapstick. It had some chapstick in it. And I couldn't remember what you call chapstick in Spanish. So I just told her, it's for your lips. And she looks at me and she covers her mouth and she starts laughing. And I looked at her and I said, what are you laughing so much about? She says, oh, I'm way too old for that stuff. She thought I'd brought her lipstick. Go ahead. Just some interesting things you might see. This guy's recycling cardboard. This is a minor load. I've seen a truck with as many as 200 mattresses on them. Now, they're foam mattresses, but I tell you what, you still got to think, if a gust of wind got a hold of that thing, what would it do? Go ahead. Now, this is, I can't remember if I showed this the last time I was here, but I just wanted to show you ladies what a real laundry room looked like, okay? So, you ready for this? All right, so you got your water supply that comes down through here and fills up your 55-gallon drum. You got your 5-gallon bucket of clothes over here. You begin to pull your clothes out and put them on the rocks. You scoop a pail or two of water out and wash your clothes. And then you hang them on this barbed wire up here. You know what the barbed wire is for? It won't let none of it blow away, I promise. You might have holy clothes, but it won't blow away on you. Anybody want to upgrade? Go ahead. All right. In closing, this is God has opened a lot of doors through the Gideon Ministries for us. I've shared in the past about me ending up in a tire shop and being in the middle of a place that I could have been kidnapped and everything. It was a really bad part of town, and I didn't know it till I was there. But when I offered the man a Bible, he turned around to the whole shop and said, hey, this gringo's got Bibles. Anybody else want Bibles? And begin to pass out Bibles. We get to go into schools. This school we went in October. It was a bilingual school, and we had gone from school to school to school, and many of them were telling us, no, we have vacation tomorrow. And I'm like, but vacation's not till tomorrow. Why can't we come in today? But it was just, they had to prepare for vacation. That's what they said. They were preparing for vacation tomorrow. But this school invited us in, and so this young man, they put a bilingual student with all of us, and they just couldn't believe that this gringo with red hair could speak Spanish. But we'd go in the classrooms, the teacher telling them to put down their pencils, and we were able to share the gospel and gave out in about 30 minutes. We gave out close to 800 New Testaments in that school. And the young people were just so grateful and so thankful to be able to receive the gospel. And one of the shipments that we sent down when we sent the last container down with the pizza shop, I believe that there were some from here also that helped donate money to be able to purchase these Bibles. That the National Church came to me. I asked, how can I help y'all? Okay, we're not giving you money anymore. How can I help you? And they said, we need Bibles. We've got new churches and new ministries, and the new people in those churches are asking for Bibles. And so God opened the door, and money came in, and we bought, I forget, $600 or $700 worth of Bibles and put them in there. This was the presentation to the National Church, and then they distributed them out to the churches that needed them, that had all the new converts there in their churches. And I think that wraps it up, Brother Johnny. Yep, that wraps it up. So this is our family, and what a privilege it is to serve God. I love what I do. I'm exhausted, but I love what I do. I got home. I started looking at my calendar Thursday, and I was like, oh, yeah, I've got to be in Thomasville Sunday night. And I got home Friday night about 10, and I got up Saturday morning. I felt like I'd been run over by a Mack truck. But you know what? This is what I live off of. I love sharing the gospel. I love going into these places, and there's such an openness to receive the gospel. We through the medical teams and stuff that we take there, the openness of the people as they come through our doors, the opportunity to not just share the gospel, but also share a way to make a living. We hire, there's probably close to 40 people that we give work to in San Luis because of the different projects and stuff that we have going. And so the Lord just opens doors for us to have an influence on those people, to share the gospel wherever we go, whether it's in the gas station, in the schools, opening new churches. The church, the National Church this last year, they have 4 new churches that they opened throughout the country. People that are calling saying, we need a church in our area. We'll donate the land. If you'll come build a church and send us the pastor, we'll donate the land. And so it's just really neat to see how the ministry in Honduras is growing and how the Lord is blessing the work there. Do you have any questions tonight? I feel like I've talked and talked and talked, and I hope it's been interesting to you. Because there is a lack of bananas in Guatemala, okay? And they told me, because I was asking those questions this time, and they said that Guatemala has a certain, they have a contract to sell so many bananas to the United States and to other countries, and they don't have enough bananas to fill the containers. So what they do is they bring them over from Honduras into Guatemala to finish filling the container and send them out to Guatemalan bananas. I think they do the same in El Salvador. But there is a difference. I don't know. You probably don't. You just get a glob of bananas and take them home with you. But if you look, each one's got the country posted on them. And they do. They taste different, okay, from each country. When we first came back, Caden, the 6-year-old, he would only eat Honduran bananas. We bought some from El Salvador and some from Costa Rica. He wouldn't eat them. But Tiffany bought the Honduran bananas, and boy, he'd scarf them up like crazy. I was like, I didn't know there's that much difference in them. From my heart to each one of y'all, thank you. Y'all have been so faithful in supporting our family. And I can't express enough what that means to us, not only financially, but also in your prayers. And there have been times that we've been in situations that we have known that there were people praying for us, that we were covered by the prayers of God's people. Y'all have come alongside of us, and you have partnered with us and been very supportive of us. And from my heart, it means a whole lot, and we deeply appreciate it. All right? I'll turn it back to you, Brother Mayor.
Thank you, Brother Melton. And so this is my introduction to your all's ministry, and I'm just blown away with how God is using you, and it's incredible. The gospel's going forward, and he's using you in ways I've never heard. I've never heard a presentation like that. And just amazing what the Lord is doing. And so we want to open our pocketbooks up, and we want to give tonight, and that God would just use us in some way to be able to support this. And certainly we need to pray, and we will continue to pray, but we want to give financially as well. So I'd encourage you to dig deep tonight, and the ushers are going to come forward. And before they pass the plates, I want to just have prayer for the Meltons, but Let's just dig deep tonight for this offering. Would you bow your heads? Let's pray together.